All right, if we've been distracted today, I apologize. We got a lot of things going on. We got Big Ten Media Days in Indianapolis. Somebody in a tweet to us used a phrase I've never heard before, a Richard Beater. And then probably the most important thing is Pick Six Previews. Preview is out. 161 pages of college football porn that we are sifting through during the breaks, and there is so much fantastic stuff in it from top to bottom from this man who puts a lot of time and effort and research into it, and it has proven that it is nearly spot on when we get to the end of the season. It is football season, my friends, because the man, the myth, the legend, Pick Six Previews, Brett Ciancia, is back with us. First and foremost, congratulations. I know this is a huge project for you, and to get it done and to get it out there so people can purchase it and consume it is a chore, and I'm happy for you. It is another fantastic addition.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Gary. Appreciate the praise. As the confetti settles down on the national title stage in January, I begin my process, and it's a seven-month project, really. It's a one-man operation here. I do all 66 programs and Power 5. And what that is a mix of film study, but then also my numbers, calling coaches, calling coordinators, and beat writers, and really compiling this thing, watching spring games. So, yeah, and then this year with the transfer portal going crazy, you can imagine it was a little bit more of a logistical burden, but I loved every second of it. The 10th annual Pick Six Previews edition is live right now. I'm excited to break it down for you guys.
We'll start right away with Nebraska, but I want to ask you, your thoughts on if all of a sudden the SEC wakes up in 2022 or 2023 and we have Oklahoma at Alabama and Texas at LSU as conference games?
Well, yeah, it's crazy news that came out yesterday or last night. It feels like 2010 all over again.
Yes, it does.
Of course, Nebraska went through that process. And I think, though, looking back, I know that there were some tensions with Nebraska, the administration, and the fans against the Big Ten administration this past summer. I think looking back now, you can understand more about that decision of why to leave the Big 12, just the instability there that's been showing in 2010, and then now again with Texas wanting to get all the demands filled and kind of run the show. So it might have looked stale last year, but I think now you can understand a little bit better why the move was the right one to go to the Big Ten.
You can follow Brett, by the way, and a great follow at Pick Six Previews. We'll tell you more about, besides the preview, other things that you can align yourself with Pick Six Previews. Let's just start right away with Nebraska, because as other preseason magazines are out there, Brett, and preseason polls that came out yesterday, Nebraska's fifth. There's a lot of fours, mostly fifths. You have Nebraska as part of that middle tier in the West Division. I think, Brett, you have the most optimism from national guys on Nebraska. You have them tied for third in the Big West. Walk me through your thinking on how you see Nebraska's 2021 season unfolding.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to like about Nebraska here in Scott Frost's fourth season. As a program, you hope to see all that strength and conditioning starting to pay dividends here. It's 4 years in. I know that last year might have been a wash, but with the lack of spring ball. But here we are, it's year four. I think you're starting to see that in both trenches on the defensive line and the offensive line. Defensive line, you're building depth and a couple key starters there. On the offensive line, yeah, proven star in Cam Jurgens, our emerging star. Two top 100 near five-star guys at the tackles with Corcoran and Benhart. So I think you're starting to see size. Frost said it after the Iowa game. He said, we just need to get bigger. And I think you're getting one step closer to that. Specifically with some personnel, Adrian Martinez, we've talked a lot about him. He's flashed some brilliance over the years, some great moments and great, quarters and halves. Can he piece together full games and a full season and limit those turnovers and destructive plays? So I think he has his best year this year coming up. In the spring game, he looked like he had that old 2018 speed, his old freshman speed back. I know it was no non-contact, but he looked like his old self. And then really a veteran defense, and that's really what stood out to me is the defense making gains. It was the first time that Nebraska finished in the top half of the Big Ten defensively since 2013 in my numbers. So a lot to like there, a lot of experience back. So from a West scope, Wisconsin and Iowa, they kind of have the proven formula at the top, and it's hard to pick against them. So really in this middle tier, I see Nebraska, Minnesota, and Northwestern, with Nebraska and Minnesota tied in third there.
Let's then go up above Nebraska. Iowa finished very well last year. They had a hiccup to begin the year with Purdue, but they beat Wisconsin as part of their six-game winning streak to finish the season. They were playing extremely well. Now, they've lost some key players, but they're more experienced at the skill positions than they've been in a while. What's your thoughts on how the Iowa season that begins with Indiana and Iowa State on the schedule? They don't have Ohio State, but they get Penn State at home. Where do you see Iowa in the West pecking order? Not only two, but how do they get to winning the division?
Yeah, I mean, you're right on with Iowa. I have them second in the Big Ten West. It was razor thin between them and Wisconsin for me. I went back and forth on this one, to be honest. They're very similar rosters and very similar proven formulas in the Big Ten West. They've kind of figured out the secret. It's big offensive lines. It's a dominant defense. It's great player developers as a program. They're, you know, Iowa and Wisconsin are at the top of my player development metric and win conversion metrics. You know, they bring under-recruited guys and turn them into NFLers. But now at both these schools, they just hit their decade high in recruiting. So they're, you know, injecting, they're infusing higher star talent into the roster now. But specifically with Iowa, what I really like is the core of their offensive line. Tyler Lindenbaum is an All-American right there at center, and two returning starters aside him at guard. And that's so important in their inside run scheme, having the interior of the line, you know, experienced and veteran and all-conference caliber. So I like what they have there. Tyler Goodson proved to be one of the best backs in the conference. You hit on it. They have their best wide receiver stable, at least talent-wise. They might be young, but they're definitely growing there. And then their back seven on defense is one of the best in the country. So a lot to like about Iowa. And like I said, they've found the formula that works. And I have them 15th overall in the country.
As you were putting this preview together of the 66 Power 5 teams, Brett, how much did you factor in last year being a COVID season? Some handled it better than others. But how did you apply that to how you looked at 20 and what it would mean for 21?
Well, yeah, it just required me to dig in a lot more. Normally, when I'd just be able to glance at some of these season stats and my game grader, because everyone had the same amount of games in years past, that was easier. But with this, you had 66 programs, 66 unique scenarios in the way that the virus season and off season really impacted each one. I mean, I had to dig into each one more than ever, because at some schools, it really hit with quarantines and opt-outs and you know, games missed, games canceled. Certain position groups were hit by the virus or out for multiple weeks. So it's just a lot of extra context that I had to dig into. And then you talk about schools that were changing coaches or changing coordinators in 2020 and didn't get all that valuable spring and summertime to install new schemes. So all that factored in. Now the transfer portal, you have all that happening where, you know, Tennessee, they lost like their six best players, and Oklahoma scooped up a bunch. So just, yeah, so a lot more research had to go into it. I love doing it, and I think I hit on each all 66 of these, and I think I go a little deeper than other ones, other preseason mm-hmm. magazines, where it's just usually a collection of just returning starters numbers and their heights and weights, that kind of thing. I try and look at a different angle for each program. I mean, with you know, with Mississippi State, I'm looking at Leach's second year bonus, so on average, how much he improves a program in his second year. Or Missouri, I looked at their new recruiting surge within Missouri, his new zoo, he calls it. Hmm. Or with Arizona, for example, just talking with their head coach about his commitment to owning the state and calling every high school coach in Arizona. So I think I try to find an angle that's a little bit different for each program.
Wisconsin opens with Penn State, and before they get out of the month, or before they get to October 9th, they will have played Notre Dame in Chicago and Michigan back in Madison. Talking about COVID, Wisconsin was impacted by COVID. It impacted the Nebraska-Wisconsin game last year. Impacted the quarterback, Graham Mertz. Kind of a sideways season in Wisconsin. Paul Christ is back again. They've upgraded in recruiting. They've got some key skill guys that are coming back. We're talking about Iowa skill guys. Wisconsin's got some key skill guys coming back. Wisconsin sits atop the West Division in your preview, Brett. But how close is Wisconsin to the team that sits atop the East in Ohio State?
Yeah, so there's definitely still a gap there between Wisconsin and the playoff tier and the, you know, the Ohio State level. That's been the case for the last handful of years. But looking at 2020 season for Wisconsin, yeah, this is one where the context really mattered. Where coming into that season, they had two areas where really the virus hopefully couldn't impact. They were a little thin. Was it offensive line? They were younger than usual. And at wide receiver, they really only had two outside threats. And what ended up happening was that those position groups got hit. And, so it was kind of the perfect scenario for a meltdown, and it ended up being one of their worst seasons in a while. So, you know, all of that is fixed for 2021. All those younger guys now with extra, you know, game reps, that pays dividends. Nine starters back on defense. I think it's one of the best defenses in the country. Even their coordinator, Jim Leonard, turned down a Packers offer to stay in Wisconsin. He's that confident in what he's built there and loves the school that much. So I think that they have a special defense this year. And at offense, some stability with Graham Mertz and a second-year starter running back. So a lot to like, but I just don't think they've cracked the code on that playoff tier yet.
If they don't win the West, Brett, what will be the reason?
Probably lack of playmakers on the outside. That might be an issue again. They only had two guys, Danny Davis and Pryor last year, and when both were knocked out, they had no threat over the on the outsides. They relied too heavily on the tight end in the middle, and the run game couldn't get a push as usual. So if you start to lose outside threats and become more one-dimensional than usual, then you might have a lot of coin flip games that could go the other way.
So you have in that tier that we were talking about where you have Nebraska, you got Minnesota and Northwestern. Northwestern returns the fewest production numbers from last year. It's in the cycle for Fitzgerald, but two of the last 3 years, as you know, Brett, he's won the West Division. You could say this is a rebuilding year. How does Pat Fitzgerald handle a rebuilding year when they're used to being atop the West? Now they could fall as low as maybe fifth.
Yeah, so with Northwestern, I like to think of them as how they go in cycles. 2 years ago when they were extremely veteran, 3 years ago at this point, when they were extremely veteran, they grinded out a Big Ten West title. And then the transition year happened in 2019 where all those guys were gone. It was youth, it was injuries, it was a mess, and they went 3-9. And then again in 2020, it all reversed again where all those young guys were veteran. And they thrived in one-score games, in close outcomes, in the red zone, in third down, all those metrics and numbers they just thrived on and grinded out wins. So here we are again now, 2021. All those guys are gone. They have the fewest returning starters, the fewest returning production. They lose longtime 51-year coach Hankwitz, their defensive coordinator, and they lose a couple All-American caliber players on their defense. So I see a major reload, and this is not to knock them as a program. I have full respect for Pat Fitzgerald, what he's built there, but you got to understand that they operate in cycles. Now, I'm sure they'll pull an upset somewhere where we least expect it, and I'll bet they're back in the title race next fall.
How far from the 19 team is this current Minnesota team?
Yeah, so they took a step back last year, but they were a lot closer than that 3-4 record would show. They had a bogus penalty against in the Purdue game that cost them a win, and they had a lead against Wisconsin and got a little bit too conservative in their play calls. So 3-4 on paper, they were more like a 4-3 or a 5-2 even. So I think they're solid. Now, offensively, that's going to have to carry them again this year with the whole offensive line back, the league's leading running back, and a multi-year starter, Tanner Morgan. He's got to get back to his 19 form. Defensively is the issue. That's why I don't have them up there with the Wisconsins and Iowas yet. They need to show me that they can reload on defense after that veteran unit from 2019, because it collapsed last year with all those guys gone.
Ohio State is not only a playoff contender, but I mean not only the beast of the Big Ten, but they're a playoff contender. But what about this Ohio State team? They lost a lot. I know they recruit well. They just kind of reload. They shuffle new guys in. But what about this Ohio State team? Do you think also keeps them right in line of being a perennial playoff contender and maybe getting into the national championship game again?
Yeah, so they're one of those reload programs, like you said. And, I actually don't have Alabama or Clemson in the playoff this year as other reloaders. Mm-hmm. With Ohio State, I don't see a threat to the conference title, so I do have them still in the playoff as the Big Ten champs. And what I like from them is their firepower at wide receiver. I mean, they always have the best stable in the country. They have two, what I have as first-team All-Americans, and Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. Both could contend for first-team All-American honors. Yes, it's a quarterback vacancy, but it's three very qualified guys. Two are five-stars, and C.J. Stroud looks like he's emerged as the leader so far. They can't go wrong there. I mean, it's a problem that any other school in the country would love to have. And then they have two of the best tackles there with Thayer Munford and Nicholas Petit-Frere. And then a lot to like on defense, too. Haskell Garrett's an All-American candidate coming back at D-tackle and a couple pieces in the back seven. So, yeah, just on paper, they recruited a top five or top three level, and they have a great staff that's proven themselves, and there's no need to overthink it. I think Ohio State's still the cream of the crop.
How much in love are you with Oklahoma?
Yeah, so I didn't have them in the playoff last year, and that ended up hitting. I was right there, but I do have them entering it this year. The difference being that they've reloaded a quarterback. It's now his second year, Spencer Rattler. The offensive line is intact and back for a second year now. And really what's held them back from being a 10 or 11 win team to a real playoff contender is their defense. And now they have that too. You know, Alex Grinch entering his third season there as the coordinator. He calls it his speed defense strategy where, you know, they substitute out some size for speed. And blitz from all over the place and create turnovers. And they were very quietly a top 20 defense last year. And 10 starters are back, and it's all five-star guys. So, yeah, I have them winning the Big 12.
Your thoughts on Iowa State? We've talked a lot in the last couple of years about Matt Campbell. Where do you see Iowa State, who will begin the year in the preseason top 10?
Well, yeah, I really love Iowa State, and I wrote this in the book. I think they're America's team this year, if you want to call them that, because it's a bunch of under-recruited guys and walk-ons that really committed to the strength program and bought into the coaching schemes. And here they are as veterans, fifth and sixth year guys in some cases. But it's all about timing. So this is probably Iowa State's best team in school history, but it pairs up against Oklahoma's you know, first national title threat in decades. So. Just bad timing there, or else I'd have had them winning the league. You know, Matt Campbell, everything's been said about him as a program builder. You know, he's turned down other lucrative offers to stay there and really build something from the ground up. Reminds me of the old program builders like Frank Beamer or Bobby Bowden or even a Joe Pa. And, yeah, it's his best team yet. That defense is unique, running their 3-3-3, their dime stack package. It's really fun to watch, so I hope they make a run at it.
We'll have plenty of time leading up to the season. We talk again to break down individual teams. But I want to hit on two of your other playoff teams. You have Oklahoma as the number one. You have Ohio State as the number three. Does this feel like for Kirby Smart, they got their quarterback in JT Daniels. They've got an abundance of NFL talent. It's been a while. Is this finally the year that Georgia breaks through? I don't want to say the now or never, because I think Kirby's got that program in a right spot. But if you look at the talent on both sides of the ball, does it feel like a now or never time for Georgia to win a title?
Well, it's close to that. I mean, it's certainly, you know, you talk about windows of opportunity where they definitely have a window here. They should go claim it while they have it, because Florida's going through a major offensive transition in the East. East Division, and then across the way with Alabama, they're going through a massive reload and transition. So if they're going to rise up and claim the SEC title and make a playoff push, now's the year to do it. In the same sense where I said Oklahoma finally has a defense, I think here with Georgia, they finally have an offense. They went out and signed Todd Monken, their coordinator, to bring in a modern, you know, modernized vertical passing attack, similar to what LSU had 2 years ago and Alabama the last few years, to really unlock that blue-chip talent. Because people forget that Georgia's the number one recruiter in the last 5 years and the last 3 years on average. So it's a well-stocked roster. It's veteran on defense. And now you have a five-star arm with JT Daniels. So I think it all comes together. They avoid Alabama and A&M and LSU in the cross division. So if they can beat Clemson, I know it's a big if, but I think they will. If they open up and beat Clemson, then they're on a nice track to the playoff.
You also have North Carolina in the playoff as beating Clemson and ending their seven-year dynasty. What about North Carolina? I know there's a lot of momentum for Mack Brown. They've recruited well. They have a Heisman Trophy / NFL guy that's pulling the trigger at quarterback in Sam Howell. The schedule isn't daunting. Why do you like North Carolina so much to upend Clemson in the ACC and make it into the playoff?
Yeah, this one's really catching a lot of attention, as you can imagine. I don't think any other publication has them close. But no, there's a lot to like. Real quickly, I spoke with their offensive coordinator, Phil Longo. He's an offensive genius. The way he's paired his, you know, air raid pass concepts on the outsides with a downhill run game in the middle. So good balance on offense. It's a Heisman candidate quarterback with Sam Howell. All five linemen are back, and they're NFL-sized. Added a couple key transfers too, like Ty Chandler, Tennessee starting running back for 3 years, takes over. Then defensively, this is what really, so the offense we know is there. We know it's going to be, you know, another top five unit again, but what brings them from the 8-9 win range up to the 11-12 win range is their growth on defense. With those back-to-back top 10 classes with Mac Brown, it's all these young guys. They have five stars in the, on the defensive line that are now bursting into the starting lineup. It's two of the best corners in the country with Storm Duck on the outsides. And, 10 starters back on defense from a group that really started to play well at the end of the year. So a lot to like, favorable schedule, and they're actually favored in all 12 games if you check that at Vegas, one of the very few out there that are favored every week. And I think they go 11-1 and end up beating Clemson in that game in Charlotte.
That is wild that we're talking about. North Carolina football could go 11-1.
Yeah, no, it really is, because you talk about all these football blue bloods, when is Texas going to be back? When is Miami going to be back? And all it takes is an ace recruiter like Mac Brown to build a staff of elite coordinators around him and then really take advantage of a nice recruiting ground there in North Carolina. It's a great football state in high school, and UNC for forever was not able to retain that talent, but he is now at a 60% clip keeping those blue chippers in state, and it's kind of a sleeping giant. So here we are.
One final one with Brett Cianci of Pick Six Previews. Oregon is the darling. USC's coming on. Anything you like about the Pac-12? I mean, you have nobody in the playoff from the Pac-12, but anything you like about that league?
So while I don't see a playoff contender from the Pac-12, I do see six quality top 25 caliber teams. It's a deep conference, but they're all still in that above average or great area, not elite. Oregon I have winning the North. Washington's right there, at least defensively. They have one of the best defenses in the country again. The South is a very crowded division at the top between Utah and USC and Arizona State and even UCLA entering their best season under Chip Kelly. I ended up going with Utah. It's a very proven product, the way they develop players, and spoke with their coordinator, Morgan Scally. He feels it's his best, front seven since that 2019 team that really was one a few plays away from making the playoff 2019. So I like their defense a lot. They hit the transfer portal hard at the offensive skill positions, too, to try and inject some talent there on offense. So I have Oregon and Utah in the conference title.
This is great. I'm glad it's a fantastic preview. I know you put so much work into it, but it's the research you do for the people that purchase it. It is well worth it. And I'll let you pat yourself on the back here, because I want you to get the right praise, but I want you to give the right numbers. It is, again, Pick Six Previews is the most accurate preseason magazine that is out there in terms of predictions on playoff and winners and losers.
Yeah, so Stats and Accuracy has been grading the preseason publications for the last 30-plus years, all the ones you see on newsstands and online. And since I launched in 2012, my Power 5 BCS, the Power 5 leagues, are the most accurate over that time span, the first 9 years. So beating everyone. So here we are in year 10. I can't believe it's been a full decade, but I've loved every second of it. It's been a pleasure talking with you on this show and all your listeners on Twitter. So, keep it up, and hopefully we'll talk more this summer.
We will do that. How's the mini helmets going?
Yeah, helmet biz. So, obviously, the book took over a lot of my time this summer, but now the book is done. It turns into what you call as talking season. So, a lot of radios and podcasts, and then we'll get the helmet biz started up, too. And I have the Nebraska mini helmet set and expanding into more Nebraska high schools. I keep getting requests, so that's great stuff. And, looking forward to keep building that up.
Always, my friend, it's great to have you on, and it's football season, and I love what you've done in the 10th year with the book.
Thanks, Gary. Appreciate you having me on.
That's Brett Cianci from Pick Six Previews. You can follow him on Pick Six Previews on Twitter. You can also, it's $18. It's going to be the best $18 you can spend the day. There's an unreal amount of information. You heard a lot of the stuff that we were talking about, more in-depth. All 66 Power 5 programs. It's the most accurate BCS Power 5 preview since he launched it in 2012. You can go to pick6previews.com. You can see the link to download the book, and we will start up with Brett in his weekly spots to talk college football from Saturday, 5 weeks until the beginning of the season. We'll sneak in a couple of more nuggets from Scott Frost. The players have not spoken yet. In Indianapolis, it's the head coach that's making the tour. He did the podium, and he's doing some side sessions. He's actually on the Big Ten Network right now. George, you want to bring up this real quick? because they're talking about his quarterback.
Well, as any of us would have wanted to, not just him, but as a team. I think he's been through the highs and lows of being Nebraska quarterback and having that spotlight on him, and I think he's really comfortable with that and that challenge now, and I see a confident, determined young man with a lot better pieces around him than he's had in his first 3 years.
Coach, there's some new rules about how much contact you can have in camp. Does that change much of what you do? Are you in favor of the rule change?
Yeah, we don't have anything to do with the rule change. You know that. Yeah. That being said, I don't think it's going to change us much, and I don't think it'll change most people. Fall camps aren't just line up and tackle each other to the ground every play anymore like the Junction Boys.
Right.
You know, we try to take care of our student athletes and get them as ready to play as we can without risking getting them hurt. And the number of days they gave us in helmets only and shoulder pads and helmets and full pads, I don't think will change our approach very much.
That's the head
coach.
You
renew your rivalry with Oklahoma this year.
We'll stick with it. Okay.
I mentioned this earlier. I was talking to Mike Loxley about Maryland and West Virginia and that maybe people who are longtime Big Ten fans don't understand the implications of rivalries. I mean, it didn't get much better than Nebraska and Oklahoma nationally played some of the most significant games in the history of college football. So give people who may not understand that rivalry a little bit of a primer of what it's all about.
Well, I'm sitting here on the Big Ten stage, and there's dozens of good rivalries in this league that have gone back 100 years. In my lifetime, growing up around Nebraska football and being around it, there was nothing better than Nebraska-Oklahoma. And for a long time, the winner of that game had a great chance to win the conference, have a shot at the national championship. That's the rivalry that I grew up with. I know our players are really excited to go down there and have a chance.
You spoke earlier when you were at the podium about penalties, turnovers.
Let's stick with this. This is a coach-to-coach
really
question.
To address, and you feel like your team has embraced that. How do you coach those type of things differently when you think they've been an issue in the past?
I think some of it, Coach, will happen organically and naturally. If you have a young team, you're more prone to making mistakes, and we've had a young team for 3 years. Right. We're still a little bit young, but we're a lot more experienced than we've been. And I think the other big step is getting the kids to recognize that those things are issues and things that we can improve on. And we've lost too many close games since I've been at Nebraska, and usually that comes down to one play or two. One play on special teams or one turnover here and there. And the guys understand if they get that fixed, we're going to have a better chance.
Well, we're back with more of the Gary Sharp Show after this.